Chapter 10. Across the prairie, in one of the cabins of the after house, Uncle Prudent and Phil Evans had found two excellent berths, with clean linen, change of clothes, and traveling cloaks and rugs. No Atlantic liner could have offered them more comfort. If they did not sleep soundly, it was that they did not wish to do so, or rather that their very real anxiety prevented them. In what adventure had they embarked? To what series of experiments had they been invited? How would the business end? And above all, what was Robber going to do with them? Franklin, the valet, was quartered forward in a cabin adjoining that of the cook. The neighborhood did not displease him. He liked to rub shoulders with the great in this world. But if he finally went to sleep, it was to dream of fall after fall, of projections through space, which made his sleep a horrible nightmare. However, nothing could be quieter than this journey through the atmosphere, whose currents had grown weaker with the evening. Beyond the rustling of the blades of the screws, there was not a sound, except now and then the whistle from some terrestrial locomotive, or the calling of some animal. Strange instinct. These terrestrial beings felt the aeronef glide over them, and uttered cries of terror as it passed. On the morrow, the 14th of June, at 5 o'clock, Uncle Prudent and Phil Evans were walking on the deck of the Albatross. Nothing had changed since the evening. There was a lookout forward, and the helmsman was in his glass cage. Why was there a lookout? Was there any chance of collision with another such machine? Certainly not. Robber had not yet found imitators. The chance of encountering an aerostat gliding through the air was too remote to be regarded. In any case, it would be all the worse for the aerostat, the earthen pot, and the iron pot. The Albatross had nothing to fear from the collision. But what could happen? The aeronef might find herself like a ship on the lee shore, if a mountain that could not be outflanked or passed barred the way. These are the reefs of the air, and they have to be avoided as a ship avoids the reefs of the sea. The engineer, it is true, had given the course, and in doing so had taken into account the altitude necessary to clear the summits of the high lands in the district. But as the aeronef was rapidly nearing a mountainous country, it was only prudent to keep a good lookout, in case some slight deviation from the course became necessary. Looking at the country beneath them, Uncle Prudent and Phil Evans noticed a large lake, whose lower southern end the Albatross had just reached. They concluded, therefore, that during the night the whole length of Lake Erie had been traversed, and that, as they were going due west, they would soon be over Lake Michigan. There can be no doubt of it, said Phil Evans, and that group of roofs on the horizon is Chicago. He was right. It was indeed the city from which the 17 railways diverge, the Queen of the West, the vast reservoir into which flow the products of Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, Missouri, and all the states which form the western half of the Union. Uncle Prudent, through an excellent telescope he had found in his cabin, easily recognized the principal buildings. His colleague pointed out to him the churches and public edifices, the numerous elevators or mechanical granaries, and the huge Sherman Hotel, whose windows seemed like 100 glittering points on each of its faces. If that is Chicago, said Uncle Prudent, it is obvious that we are going farther west than is convenient for us if we are to return to our starting place. And, in fact, the Albatross was traveling in a straight line from the Pennsylvania capital. But if Uncle Prudent wished to ask Robber to take him eastwards, he could not then do so. That morning the engineer did not leave his cabin. Either he was occupied in some work, or else he was asleep, and the two colleagues sat down to breakfast without seeing him. The speed was the same as that during last evening. The wind being easterly, the rate was not interfered with at all, and as the thermometer only falls a degree centigrade for every 70 meters of elevation, the temperature was not insupportable. And so, in chatting and thinking and waiting for the engineer, Uncle Prudent and Phil Evans walked about beneath the forest of screws, whose gyratory movement gave their arms the appearance of semi-diaphanous discs. The state of Illinois was left by its northern frontier in less than 2 hours and a half, and they crossed the father of waters, the Mississippi, whose double-decked steamboats seemed no bigger than canoes. Then Little Batteries flew over Iowa after having sighted Iowa City about 11 o'clock in the morning. A few chains of hills, bluffs as they are called, curved across the face of the country trending from the south to the northwest, whose moderate height necessitated no rise in the course of the Aeronef. Soon the bluffs gave place to the large plains of western Iowa and Nebraska, immense prairies extending all the way to the foot of the Rocky Mountains. Here and there were many rios, affluents or minor affluents of the Missouri. On their banks were towns and villages, growing more scattered as the Batteries sped farther west. Nothing particular happened during this day. Uncle Prudent and Phil Evans were left entirely to themselves. They hardly noticed Franklin sprawling at full length in the bow, keeping his eyes shut so that he could see nothing. And they were not attacked by vertigo, as might have been expected. There was no guiding mark, and there was nothing to cause the vertigo, as there would have been on the top of a lofty building. The abyss has no attractive power when it is gazed at from the car of a balloon or deck of an aeronef. It is not an abyss that opens beneath the aeronaut, but an horizon that rises round him on all sides like a cup. In a couple of hours the Batteries was over Omaha, on the Nebraskan frontier. Omaha City, the real head of the Pacific Railway, that long line of rails, 4,500 miles in length, stretching from New York to San Francisco. For a moment they could see the yellow waters of the Missouri, then the town, with its houses of wood and brick in the center of a rich basin, like a buckle in the iron belt which clasps North America round the waist. Doubtless, also, as the passengers in the Aeronef could observe all these details, the inhabitants of Omaha noticed the strange machine. Their astonishment at seeing it gliding overhead could be no greater than that of the president and secretary of the Weldon Institute at finding themselves on board. Anyhow, the journals of the Union would be certain to notice the fact. It would be the explanation of the astonishing phenomenon which the whole world had been wondering over for some time. In an hour the Batteries had left Omaha and crossed the Platte River, whose valley is followed by the Pacific Railway in its route across the prairie. Things looked serious for Uncle Prudent and Phil Evans. It is serious, then, this absurd project of taking us to the Antipodes. And whether we like it or not, exclaimed the other. Robber had better take care. I am not the man to stand that sort of thing. Nor am I, replied Phil Evans. But be calm, Uncle Prudent, be calm. Be calm. And keep your temper until it is wanted. By 5 o'clock they had crossed the Black Mountains covered with pines and cedars, and Little Batteries was over the appropriately named Badlands of Nebraska, a chaos of azure-colored hills, of mountainous fragments fallen on the soil and broken in their fall. At a distance these blocks take the most fantastic shapes. Here and there amid this enormous game of knuckle bones there could be traced the imaginary ruins of medieval cities with forts and dungeons, pepper-box turrets, and machicolated towers. And in truth these bad lands are an immense ossuary, where lie bleaching in the sun myriads of fragments of pachyderms, chelonians, and even, some would have us believe, fossil men, overwhelmed by unknown cataclysms ages and ages ago. When evening came the whole basin of the Platte River had been crossed, and the plain extended to the extreme limits of the horizon, which rose high owing to the altitude of the Batteries. During the night there were no more shrill whistles of locomotives, or deeper notes of the river steamers, to trouble the quiet of the starry firmament. Long bellowing occasionally reached the Aeronef from the herds of buffalo that roamed over the prairie in search of water and pasturage. And when they ceased, the trampling of the grass under their feet produced a dull roaring similar to the rushing of a flood, and very different from the continuous FRRRR of the screws. Then from time to time came the howl of a wolf, a fox, a wild cat, or a coyote, the Anis latrans, whose name was justified by his sonorous bark. Occasionally came penetrating odors of mint, and sage, and absinthe, mingled with the more powerful fragrance of the conifers which rose floating through the night air. At last came a menacing yell, which was not due to the coyote. It was the shout of a redskin, which no tenderfoot would confound with the cry of a wild beast. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.